Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the Dion Gordon Podcast. I am your host, the connoisseur of common sense, the purveyor of authenticity, the man who calls it right down the middle, Dion Tyree Gordon. Enough of the bullshit. Let's get to work. Conference Championship Sunday. This is the second greatest day of the year, second only to Super Bowl Sunday, which will occur in 2 weeks. The final four teams remaining, the Kansas City Chiefs, Buffalo Bills, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and the Green Bay Packers. Let's start with the AFC Championship game. Kansas City and Buffalo. Every 27 years since 1967, Kansas City and Buffalo have played for the AFL/AFC championship. They played in 1967 for the AFL championship. In 1993, they played for the AFC championship. I remember that game growing up as a kid. That was Joe Montana playing for the Kansas City Chiefs, going up against the Buffalo Bills, who were trying to get their fourth consecutive Super Bowl. Buffalo came out on top that day, 30-13. And now 27 years later in 2021 is once again Kansas City and Buffalo. Different outcome today. Kansas City 38, Buffalo 24. Buffalo races out to a 9-0 lead. Miko Harman fumbles a punt. Buffalo recovers inside the 5-yard line. Josh Allen with a quick touchdown pass. They go up 9-0. They miss the extra point. And from that moment on, all hell broke loose. Kansas City does what Kansas City does in the playoffs. You go back to last year when they're down 24-0 to the Houston Texans. And they finished the game on a 51-7 run to win 51-31. You go to the AFC Championship game last year versus Tennessee. They were down by 10 in that game. They came from behind to win it. And, of course, you go back to last year's Super Bowl. Kansas City, much to my chagrin, was able to win that game after being down double digits. They were down 20-10 versus San Francisco with 7.5 to go in the fourth quarter. They go on a 21-0 run to close that game out and win Super Bowl 54. I'm still having flashbacks, still having PTSD about that game. Still need to talk to a therapist about what happened in last year's Super Bowl, but that's neither here nor there. These are the Kansas City Chiefs. That's what they do. They got a fire, explosive, powerful juggernaut offense. And, you know, I'm watching the game. Buffalo goes up 9-0, and I said to myself, it doesn't matter. Kansas City got them right where they want them. They're down 9-0. This ain't shit to them. Like I said, last season they were down 24-0 in a playoff game, overcame that to win. So Kansas City can be down by double digits, and it doesn't really mean a whole lot. And it was early, too. It was very early in the first quarter. Then the second quarter is when all hell broke loose. That's when the game was pretty much over in the second quarter. But, you know, Kansas City is the perfect marriage of brilliant, ingenious, innovative play calling. With Eric Bieniemy, who should be a head coach somewhere in this league right now. That's an absolute travesty and a joke and a farce that Eric Bieniemy was not taken into serious consideration to be a head coach on somebody's football team. He's only the offensive coordinator for the best team in pro football and the most explosive offense in pro football. He's only the offensive coordinator for the defending Super Bowl champions. He's only the offensive coordinator for the best quarterback in the league in Patrick Mahomes, who was giving him his personal seal of approval many times. Patrick Mahomes has often vouched for Eric Bieniemy to be a head coach somewhere in his league. So was Andy Reid. So you have two highly respected, two great players slash coaches advocating for someone to get a job and they still don't get it. That's pretty ridiculous to me, given the accolades and accomplishments that Bieniemy has had over the year, but I digress. But you have this perfect marriage of brilliance in the play calling and preparation, along with excellent football players who are highly skilled and the best at their position. They have the best quarterback, arguably the best tight end, debatably the best receiver on the same offense. So when you line up against Kansas City, it's pick your poison. What do you want to do? And then they got all these weird gadget plays. Travis Kelce scored an underhanded touchdown shuffle pass inside the 5-yard line. They got all these unique and diverse ways to get the ball out of Mahomes' hands and into the hands of the playmakers. And they have a litany, a plethora of guys who are dangerous when they got the football in their hands. Tyreek Hill should be illegal as a football player. He is illegal. He's a living cheat code. It's unfair to line up against someone like Tyreek Hill with the skill set that he brings to every game. In this game, Tyreek Hill had 9 catches for a 172. He was all over the field. Buffalo, even with its pretty talented secondary with Tre'Davious White and all them guys back there, Poyer and Hyde, they still had no answer whatsoever for Tyreek Hill. He was out there just living his best life. And there was nothing that Buffalo could do to stop him. Travis Kelce, 13 catches, 118 yards, 2 touchdowns, targeted 15 times. It's just there's too much to deal with over there. I don't know what you're supposed to do. All this. As many times before in this podcast, the only way to really effectively stop or slow down, you're never going to stop them, but the only way to slow down Kansas City's offense, you got to be able to rush and get pressure with four, and you better play zone coverage and just hope you can keep everything in front of you. And don't let someone like Tyreek Hill or Mecole Hardman or Sammy Watkins get behind you and lead the big plays. But with all that being said, that doesn't even work. I mean, the teams who've employed that strategy, the Chargers and the 49ers and the Falcons, all lost to Kansas City. So even the best way to slow them down and neutralize them doesn't even work. It's not going to effectively stop them for four quarters. Eventually, Kansas City is going to get theirs. I say this about them all the time. You can go ahead and give them 31 points getting off the bus. The only part of this game late in the second quarter before halftime that I really felt like was competitive, it was 21-9 Kansas City. After being down 9-0, they scored 21 unanswered points. Buffalo's putting together a drive. Josh Allen completes a pass inside the 10-yard line, inside the 5-yard line, as a matter of fact. And it gets the 4th and goal, and Coach Sean McDermott decides to bring the field goal unit out and kick the field goal, settle for 3, make it 21-12 going to the half. And right then and there, that officially let me know this game was over. You're not ready to play big boy football. When you're playing versus the Kansas City Chiefs, you got to take risks, take chances, be aggressive, keep your foot on the gas pedal. You got to be ready to empty out the clip when you play versus Kansas City. You're not beating them with field goals. You got to punch it in the end zone. You got to get 6 to beat Kansas City because they're already up 21-9 on you. You kick a field goal, make it 21-12. That doesn't mean anything. Like I said, this team, you can spot them 31 points getting off the bus. You have to score points to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. You have to be aggressive. You are not just going to incrementally beat them. You can't have a democratic approach to this. You got to be ready. You got to be out for blood. You got to be able to take what you want to beat Kansas City. The one real football game they've lost is last November. The Raiders put up 41 points for that to happen. That's what it takes to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. And the Buffalo Bills, by doing that, showed they weren't really ready to win this football game and take that next step. And to me, the game was over right then and there. The second half of this game was academic. You saw the writing on the wall. Kansas City got whatever they wanted offensively. Josh Allen, on the other hand, for Buffalo, was running for his life every down and distance of this game. And fair play to him. He was able to scramble out of the pocket, make some big plays down the field. He was able to extend drives. He was able to keep plays going. I thought Josh Allen played a hell of a game given the circumstances. I thought Steve Spagnuolo, as the Kansas City Chiefs defensive coordinator, did a great job dialing up blitzes, disguising coverages, throwing Allen off his game, confusing him with different looks. Talk about Chris Jones, number 95, in the middle, just manhandling other grown men, pause if necessary, just destroying people at the line of scrimmage. Frank Clark coming off the edge, doing the same thing, able to get pressure and get some sacks on Josh Allen. Josh Allen, to me, the most impressive play he had in this game was an incomplete pass. He was flushed out of the pocket, being pressured once again, rolling towards the sideline. He gets taken down by Chris Jones, and he flings it about 40 yards out the end zone from the 40-yard line, so about 50 yards, really, out the back of the end zone. The arm strength that he has is crazy. It's ridiculous to be able to do something like that. The entire game, once again, from a 49er fan perspective, I'm watching Mahomes, I'm watching Allen operate and maneuver around the pocket. And I'm saying to myself, if that was Jimmy Garoppolo, he would have died on that play. He would have been a live casualty. Both of his kneecaps would have spontaneously combusted, and his legs would have fell off his body. He would have burst into flames if he was under the amount of pressure that Josh Allen was under in the second half and able to survive. Josh Allen walked off the field amidst this red storm, this red sea of Kansas City Chiefs, just blitzing play after play after play from the left side, from the right side, up the middle, up the A-gap. Garoppolo would have died in this game. You look at some of the plays Mahomes was making, being taken down by a defender, twisting and corkscrewing his body into the ground, but still able to make a pass to Tyreek Hill for a big gain on the first down, rolling to his left, rolling to his right, on the move, flushed out of the pocket, making plays on the run, flicking the wrist, doing shit that Patrick Mahomes normally does. He's outstanding. He's awesome. He's the best quarterback in the National Football League. I think Aaron Rodgers will be league MVP. But I think all things considered, right now, Patrick Mahomes is the best you can do. As great as Aaron Rodgers is, as the high level he played this season, like I said, I think he's a league MVP. to me, it's Mahomes' league. He's the number one quarterback in the NFL, and he showed it today. In this game today, Patrick Mahomes is 29 of 38, 325 yards, three touchdown passes. There was a lot of talk this week about his status for this game. He was in concussion protocol throughout the week. I knew he was playing the entire time. I think everyone knew Patrick Mahomes is going to play this game. Concussion protocol, you can manipulate that however you want to. You can put out whatever information you want to put out. There was no doubt that 15 was going to suit up and play in this game today. No doubt with me anyway. And he showed up and he played at an MVP level. He played to his expectation. Kansas City moving on, 38-24 over Buffalo. Great season for the Buffalo Bills. I thought they exceeded expectation this year. I thought they were going to win the AFC East. I didn't think they would go this far in the playoffs. I didn't see Josh Allen taking the steps this season that he's taken, but he's raised his game considerably. Josh Allen this year had career highs in completion percentage, touchdown passes, and yardage. Certainly the addition of Stephon Diggs helps out with all that. I think they're going to have to bring in another elite receiver and also bolster the running game going forward, as well as fortifying the pass rush on the other side of the ball. But I think the future right now looks good for Buffalo. They're going in the right direction. One more note about this game. At the end of the game, a little bit of frustration came out. Things got a little chippy, a little heated. In the fourth quarter, when it was pretty much in doubt that the outcome was already guaranteed, Kansas City was going to win and move on, and Buffalo's season was coming to an end. Allen got sacked and late in the game, taken down by Alex Okafor, and he was not too happy about this. I think the frustration came out, and maybe something was said on the field. You never know. But when Allen hit the ground, he threw the football at Okafor. Okafor got up, stood over top of him. One of Allen's offensive linemen, Dawkins, came in, and he was able to hit Alex Okafor, knock him down. Both teams kind of got at it. Looked like someone was about to jump off. Nothing really happened. I mean, it's a football fight. I don't take football fights seriously. You got dudes swinging at each other, and both of them are wearing helmets. So to me, a football fight is always a joke anyway. Another big note from this game, though, and this is important. This is real. This could have future ramifications going forward in regards to the Super Bowl. Kansas City star left tackle Eric Fisher tore his Achilles, had an Achilles injury. I don't want to say he tore it yet. I haven't gotten an official word, but he has an Achilles injury. Did not return to the game. The sideline report from Tracy Wolfson said it was bleak. People were fearing and assuming for the worst. You saw his teammates and you saw Coach Reed coming over to console him. So things don't look good for him. But that's the starting left tackle. That's the guy protecting Patrick Mahomes' blind side. And when you look at the opposition in Super Bowl 55, you look at Shaq Barrett, you look at Jason Pierre-Paul, and the way they're coming up off the edge with pressure, that could be potentially problematic for Kansas City going forward. As I said earlier, the only way to stop that offense is to get pressure on 15. That's the only way to stop any high-powered offense is to get pressure on the quarterback. But for Kansas City, I mean, this is impressive what they're doing. This is back-to-back Super Bowl appearances. This is three straight AFC Conference Championship game appearances. Patrick Mahomes is already looking like the greatest draft pick of all time. It was absolutely ingenious for Kansas City to move up in that 2017 draft and pick number 10. And it's like a quarterback out of Texas Tech who is already, right now, at this stage in his career, a first ballot NFL Hall of Famer. Patrick Mahomes already, right now, if he retired tomorrow, if Patrick Mahomes just decided for whatever reason, I don't want to play football anymore, he would already be, in my estimation, a first ballot NFL Pro Football Hall of Famer. He's already that good. Patrick Mahomes is the first player in NFL history with 300 passing yards, three plus passing touchdowns, and zero interceptions in multiple playoff games in his first four NFL seasons. Mahomes has 15 straight playoff passing touchdowns at Arrowhead Stadium without an interception, the longest such streak in any one venue in NFL postseason history. Patrick Mahomes has surpassed Matt Ryan for the most passing touchdowns in the player's first seven playoff games in NFL history with 16. Patrick Mahomes has surpassed Russell Wilson for the most playoff passing and rushing touchdowns in a player's first four seasons in NFL history with 18. Patrick Mahomes is also the first starting quarterback aged 25 or younger to make three consecutive conference championship game appearances in NFL history. First ballot NFL Pro Football Hall of Famer Patrick Mahomes. He could retire today, and you can go ahead and measure him for a gold jacket in Canton, Ohio. This dude is the beast of the NFL right now. This is his league. He might be the greatest draft pick of all time, all things considered. For one guy to turn around the fortunes of a franchise, you got to remember, you got to think, Kansas City, up until Mahomes got there, was always known as being losers. Second place guys, also Rams, always figuring out a way to choke and fail and fuck up in the playoffs. For so many years growing up, Kansas City would be 13-3, had the number one seed, number one record in the AFC, and then lose their first playoff game. You know, they've had some miserable postseason failures over the years, but that's all ancient history now. With Mahomes, the team they've assembled around them, you look at some of the draft picks in this team, Mahomes and Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and Chris Jones, Eric Fisher, Daniel Sorensen, Mecole Hardman, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And you look at some of the free agents that they brought in, like Tyrann Mathieu and Frank Clark, to solidify the defense. It's a well-built football team on both sides of the football. That defense can turn it up whenever they feel like it. When you got, I think Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk said it best. When you have Kansas City's full undivided attention, that defense is one of the best in the league. They're never going to be a lights-out shutdown defense for 16 games in the season, but in the playoffs, in big games, the defense comes to play. They show up, they show out, they get big stops when they need to, they force turnovers when they need to, and they hold up their end of the bargain. Go back 3 seasons ago, the defense was the biggest thing keeping them from getting to the Super Bowl. And then they made those additions that I was just talking about with Honey Badger and Frank Clark coming in. Josh Allen today was under pressure, 27 to 57 dropbacks. You know, that defense had just as much to do with Kansas City getting to the Super Bowl as the offense did. The guy at the center of everything they do is Patrick Mahomes. As long as he's on the field, I have a hard time picking against Kansas City. Because not only do they have innovation and diversity in their play calling and what they're able to do from a schematic standpoint, but they also have extremely talented football players at skill positions that can make plays. And in the middle of all that is a once-in-a-lifetime generational talent at the quarterback position who's able to distribute the football to those players, keep the offense moving on and off schedule, make big plays, and put points on the board. Great effort by Buffalo all game and all season that came up a little bit short. No shame in losing to the best team in the league. Better luck next season. But as for right now, the Kansas City Chiefs with first ballot NFL Pro Football Hall of Famer Patrick Mahomes are moving on to Super Bowl 55. And who will they play in Super Bowl 55? What team will oppose the defending, reigning, conquering Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs, much to my chagrin? Who will be the team to represent the National Football Conference in Super Bowl 55? In Tampa, Florida, Raymond James Stadium, that will be the team that plays in that stadium as the home team for 8 games of the regular season. That will be the tenants of Raymond James Stadium, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, being led by the quote-unquote washed-up, scheme-dependent product of Bill Belichick's system, overrated, noodle-arm quarterback known as Thomas Edward Patrick Brady, otherwise known as the GOAT, the truest living GOAT, the greatest professional quarterback who ever played in the National Football League, the true and living GOAT of professional football, Tom Brady, miraculously in his first season as a starting quarterback for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, coming over from New England, learning a new system with new team, new teammates, new coaches, new personnel, new staff, new everything, in a COVID-19 season, in a different conference, in a different division versus different division rivals, Tom Brady, who I was told was only winning Super Bowls because he had an easy path to the playoffs every year playing in the AFC East. I was told that all his success can be attributed to Bill Belichick. I was told they couldn't throw it deep down the field anymore. Tom Brady, 43 years of age, 40 touchdown passes, top 5 in the NFL in passing yards. Tom Brady today played in his 14th conference championship game. Let me put that in a proper perspective. You have teams in this league, teams, plural, signature, legendary, meaningful, impactful franchises in the history of the National Football League. Teams you cannot properly tell the story of the National Football League without mentioning the San Francisco 49ers, the Dallas Cowboys, the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Green Bay Packers, the New York Giants. Teams that have been legitimate dynasties throughout the history of this sport. As great as all those teams have been throughout their history, they by themselves as teams have not accomplished what Tom Brady as an individual player has accomplished throughout his NFL career. The San Francisco 49ers have played in 16 conference championship games with 5 different quarterbacks: John Brody, Joe Montana, Steve Young, Colin Kaepernick, and Jimmy Garoppolo have all at some point in their career led the 49ers to a conference championship game. Tom Brady by himself has played in 14 conference championship games. And now with today's victory, 31-26 over the Green Bay Packers, Tom Brady will now be appearing in his record 10th Super Bowl and will be the first ever quarterback in NFL history to play a home game in the Super Bowl. This is remarkable. This is history happening every time he touches the field. It's no different than watching LeBron James play basketball. Every time these guys take the field or the court, you are watching live history unfold right before your eyes. It is incredible. It is remarkable. It is unbelievable to watch a guy 43 years of age still playing at a high level, still winning football games, still competing for championships, 43 years of age, 21 seasons in the NFL. Tom Brady came into the NFL in the year 2000 as pick 198 in the NFL draft, the sixth round to the New England Patriots. And now 21 years later, this guy by himself has played in 10 Super Bowls. There are teams, as I said earlier, who can't even state that claim. The 49ers have played in 7 Super Bowls. The Cowboys have played in 8. The Pittsburgh Steelers have played in 8. Tom Brady by himself has played in 10. You know what Tom Brady is right now? Tom Brady is unofficially the 33rd team in the NFL. There are 32 teams in the National Football League, and then there's Tom Brady. 21 NFL seasons, Tom Brady's made the Super Bowl 10 times. That's at a percentage of 47%. Stephen Curry is the greatest three-point shooter of all time in NBA history. He has made 42% of his three-pointers. Tom Brady is more likely to get to a Super Bowl than Steph Curry is to make a three-point shot. And yet and still, there are people out here who will fucking tell me that Tom Brady somehow is not the GOAT. Are you fucking crazy? Watch football, or do you just skim through it? I know Aaron Rodgers throws a very good-looking football. I understand that. But Aaron Rodgers, as great and talented as he is, with his touchdown-to-interception ratio being what it is, with his quarterback career rating being what it is, as great as Aaron Rodgers is, can never be in the same conversation with Tom Brady. The only quarterback who belongs to be in the same conversation with Tom Brady is Joe Montana, because he went 4-0. He never lost a Super Bowl. But what Brady is doing right now, to me, has surpassed that. And I say that as a 49er fan. I've always said that Brady, I've been saying Brady was the GOAT ever since the Super Bowl 51 with the 28-3 comeback versus the Atlanta Falcons. That, to me, sealed the deal. That was his fifth championship. And you overcome the biggest deficit in Super Bowl history to do that. 28-3 with 3.5 to go in the third quarter. And you come back and win 34-28. In that moment, on that night, I was like, well, there it is. The argument's over. He just, not only by winning his fifth championship that he surpassed Joe winning 4, but he just won it in this incredible, dramatic, unbelievable fashion. I get it. Aaron Rodgers is awesome. He really is. He's incredible. To me, he's a top 10 quarterback. But at some point, we got to be honest about what we're talking about here. How are you better than someone who's won 6 times and you only won once? As I said coming into this game, all the pressure was on Aaron Rodgers. Tom Brady, to me, had no pressure on him in this game. His legacy's already solidified. It's already been proven what he's capable of. He already won the Belichick argument this season by leading this team to the conference championship game while New England went 6-10 and had 3 quarterbacks combined to throw 8 touchdown passes. Brady by himself threw 40. So to me, the Brady versus Belichick argument was already over with. He already proved he can go to a different team and lead them to the same level of success. His legacy is already solidified. Whatever Brady's doing right now is for posterity purposes. This is for future generations to talk about. Aaron Rodgers was the one who needed this win. Aaron Rodgers was the one who had to get this, to put this on his resume. That one championship was 11 years ago or 10 years ago. Long time ago. That's ancient history in the NFL. Since Aaron Rodgers won his one and only championship, Tom Brady has won 3 and has opportunity to win 4. Tom Brady's played in about 5 Super Bowls since then. Since 2011, Tom Brady has played in a conference championship game every year except 2019. Aaron Rodgers played in his 4th conference championship game today. He's 1-3. He got demolished last year versus San Francisco 37-20. Got the doors blown off on by Atlanta in 2017. And they had a game against Seattle in 2015. They should have won, but they failed. They choked and failed and pissed that game away. They were up 15-0 at halftime. Rodgers stunk to join up. He played like shit. His defense played well. They got 5 turnovers off of Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks. But Aaron Rodgers couldn't close the deal. So he has not played well in conference championship games. He's 1-3. Meanwhile, Tom Brady in conference championship games is 10-4. Thing was at stake for Aaron Rodgers in this game, and it came up short, and some of that is on him, some of that is on Coach LaFleur. Let's go ahead and recap the game and start from the top. Tampa Bay jumps out to a big lead. Brady throws a touchdown pass to Mike Evans in the back of the end zone. Rodgers comes back, throws a touchdown pass to Valdez Scantling to make it 7-7. Buccaneers come back on the next possession. Leonard Fournette takes a 20 yards for a strong grown man touchdown, running people over, spin moves, juking people out, carrying bodies into the goal line with him. Green Bay comes back, kicks the field goal, makes it 14-10. And then right before the half is when all hell broke loose in this game. 14-10, Green Bay has the ball, making a drive right before halftime. Aaron Rodgers gets picked off by Murphy Bunting. Questionable call on that play. Could have been defensive holding, pass interference, but it wasn't called. The referees were pretty loose and lenient with the way they called this game up until the very end. We'll get to that in a little bit. But it's picked off. Tampa Bay has possession. Tampa Bay gets to a 4th-and-3. They're at midfield. They convert to 4th-and-3. Now they get to the 40-yard line. In the midst of all this, Tampa Bay has used up all their timeouts. There's 8 seconds left to go in the first half. The ball's at the 40-yard line. Green Bay inexplicably, idiotically, nonsensically lines up in what appeared to be cover one coverage with one safety across the middle of the field. Man coverage on the receivers. Scotty Miller's able to get deep on Kevin King, who had a hideous game, who was torched the entire game. Scotty Miller gets deep, gets behind the coverage. Brady throws a bomb downfield about 50 yards into the end zone. Scotty Miller scores a touchdown. Now it's 21-10 going into the half. I'm watching this game. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me with this play calling defensively for the Green Bay Packers? It's 14-10. The ball's at the 40-yard line. 8 seconds left. They have no timeouts. Conventional wisdom, common sense tells you, rush 3, drop 8, zone coverage. If need be, go ahead and have guys stand with their feet on the goal line. Have them play 40 yards off the ball. This should be a Hail Mary situation. That's what I'm anticipating. This is going to be a Hail Mary situation at the most. I didn't anticipate that one guy is going to be able to run a go route and get behind the coverage with no one playing over the top and score a touchdown that easily. That was fucking ridiculous. That's a situation. I'm not even being hyperbolic in saying this. I might fire the defensive coordinator, Mike Pettine, after that situation sometime this week. Or during the game, after the game, I might have fired him. There's no excuse to call cover one robber coverage. 8 seconds to go and the ball at the 40-yard line. That's football 101. These people get paid a lot of money for these positions that they're in. That's inexcusable. You cannot make that call. That's almost as bad as Greg Williams calling cover zero against the Raiders earlier this season when the Jets were searching for their first win and Henry Ruggs got deep against an undrafted free agent corner who was left on the island by himself on a guy running a 4-2 and he caught the game-winning touchdown pass. They were equally stupid calls by ridiculous defensive coordinators who should know better. Greg Williams lost his job due to his stupidity, and I would advocate for Mike Pettine to do the same. He should also lose his job. He should be fired at some point this week. That is unconscionable. You cannot make that call defensively in that situation and with that time on the clock at that juncture of the game. That is fucking criminal, stupid, nonsensical, dumb, idiotic, whatever you want to call it. It's brain dead. Mike Pettine was coaching with CTE. Absolutely cannot make that call. Now it's 21-10 going into the half. They come out in the beginning of the second half. Green Bay has the football. Aaron Jones makes a short catch underneath and a crossing route from Aaron Rodgers. Gets hit by Jordan Whitehead. The ball comes out. Fumble recovered by Devin White. Tampa takes over. Tom Brady throws a touchdown pass to Cameron Brate to go up 28-10. Things are looking dark for the Cheeseheads at this point, but at this point of the game is when Tom Brady turned into shit. Lights out in the first half, absolutely terrible in the second half. 3 interceptions by the GOAT thrown in the second half of this football game. The first one was picked off by Adrian Amos on a throw down the far sideline. He didn't quite get it enough to the outside shoulder of his intended receiver, Mike Evans. The ball was thrown to the inside shoulder, allowing Amos to jump back into the play and make the pick. Brady tried looking him off and throwing it to Evans, but he didn't quite get, like I said, didn't quite get enough on the football. Didn't quite place it to where he wanted to place it at. Threw it to the inside. It was intercepted. That was the first pick. The second pick, now after that first pick, Green Bay was able to score a touchdown on that, make it 28-17. But with the 3 picks that Brady threw, that was the only pick they were able to take advantage of and score a touchdown on. The second pick in the red zone appeared to be another scoring drive to at least get a field goal out of it. Brady steps up in the pocket, throws it to Mike Evans a little bit too high. Off his fingertips, ball's intercepted by Jair Alexander. But on the ensuing drive, Green Bay goes 3 and out. Pressure from the edges by Shaq Barrett and Jason Pierre-Paul all game long. 5 sacks between those two. 3 for Shaq Barrett, 2 for Jason Pierre-Paul. They did a tremendous job collapsing the pocket, coming off the edge, getting pressure on Aaron Rodgers, and keeping the game close. Well, I won't say keeping the game close because they already had the lead, but keeping Green Bay from taking the lead. Green Bay was fighting from behind the entire game and never had the lead at any point in this game. And even with Brady throwing three interceptions in the second half, they could only convert and take advantage of one of those picks. The second and third pick turned into nothing. The third pick was a ball, pretty much a fuck it ball thrown by Brady. He's being pressured and he just kind of throws it up and it's once again picked off by Alexander. But once again, Green Bay is not able to turn this opportunity into points and take the lead and put pressure on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Bucs defense held up. That was, to me, the theme of the game for Green Bay. So many missed opportunities. You go back to the first half, they had first and goal, and three consecutive passes to Devontae Adams were all incomplete, short of the goal line, and they'll settle for a field goal. You look in the second half now. Tom Brady throws three interceptions. They can only convert one of those picks into points. You also look at the two-point conversion that they went for. And this was another call in the game that I questioned. At this point, it's 28-23. They had just scored a touchdown. And they decided to go for two. And me personally, I've said this before in this podcast, I'm not a big fan of chasing points. I'm just going to take the extra point in that situation, make it 28-24, and still enough time in the games at the end of the third quarter, beginning of the fourth. Still plenty of time and possessions left in this game. I don't need to be chasing points. But they went for two in that situation and didn't work out. Rodgers tried to throw it in the back of the end zone to Equanimeous St. Brown. And Ndamukong Suh got a couple fingertips on it, able to deflect the ball just a little bit to cause St. Brown to drop it in the back of the end zone. He still should have caught the ball. It was still an on-target pass right between the numbers. But he drops the football. They don't convert the two-point conversion. Now it's 28-23, and now you're just chasing points the rest of the game. So now we fast forward to the end of the game, to the fourth quarter, with about a little bit over 2 minutes left to go. Now it's 31-23. Tampa Bay has now kicked the field goal. It's 31-23. Green Bay is making a drive once again inside the red zone. It's third and goal. Aaron Rodgers is being flushed out of the pocket. It looks like he has a lane, a path to scramble, and maybe kind of sort of potentially get the touchdown on third and goal. If he'd already stepped up in the pocket, it looked like he had an opportunity to make a run to at least get close to the goal line, at the very least. He opted not to. He saw Devontae Adams in the last second coming across the goal line. This was the same play they ran in the first half that didn't work out on, where Devontae Adams caught it, but he couldn't get his feet down in bounds, so it wasn't the score. They run the same play again, but this time there's two Tampa defenders right there to break up the pass. So now it's fourth and goal with about 2:05 left to go in the game. This is the NFC Championship game. Aaron Rodgers' legacy on the line. You're the number one seeded team playing on the frozen tundra at Green Bay at Lambeau Field. This is what you play for. Aaron Rodgers is the presumptive league MVP. It's fourth and goal. The season's on the line. And what does Matt LaFleur do? Bring the field goal unit out and settle for three to make it 31-26, which ended up being the final score. His explanation after the game was that he felt like if his defense made the stop, it would in effect give them a fourth timeout with a two-minute warning plus the three timeouts they still had at that point in the game. And he expected his defense to make that stop and get the ball back for Aaron Rodgers. You're going against Tom Brady. You can't expect to get the ball. You can't give the ball back to Tom Brady in that situation because he knows what to do with it. Like I said, this is his 10th Super Bowl appearance. This is his 14th conference championship game today. 21st year in the league, 43 years of age. This guy's been there and done that, knows what he's doing. You cannot give Tom Brady the football back at that point in the game. You're at the 10-yard line, fourth and goal, season's on the line. You have the league MVP. Go for it. Put the ball in the hands of Aaron Rodgers. This is what you pay him all his money for. This is what it's all about. You're going to bring your field goal unit out there? Teams that play scared, teams that lack aggression, don't win playoff games. Tennessee showed you that earlier in the playoffs when they didn't go for it on the fourth down and gave the ball back to Baltimore and Lamar Jackson and never saw the ball for the rest of the game. Pittsburgh showed you that against Cleveland. Same situation. It didn't go for it on the fourth down late in the fourth quarter. Gave it back to Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns and never saw the ball for the rest of the game. Sean McDermott from Buffalo and Matt LaFleur from Green Bay both coached scared today, and both their teams are going home. You have to be aggressive this time of the year, especially given the competition you're going up against. When you're going up against Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady, you have to be aggressive or you're not going to win the football game. It's just as simple as that. Tampa Bay takes over, and they maintain possession of the game. There was a pass interference call late with, once again, Kevin King, who had the worst day of his life today. committed an obvious pass interference call when he grabbed the jersey of Tyler Johnson. It was a late flag, but it was a flag nonetheless. It was the appropriate call to make. It was an easy call to make. Obvious and blatant pass interference, and that was the end of the game. Once again, you can't give the ball back to Tom Brady in this type of situation. You have Aaron Rodgers. You have to go for the kill. Put the knife to the throat and OJ that motherfucker. Take the win. You have to go for the victory in that situation. You play scared, you lose playoff football games. Scared money don't make money. Naturally, you're going to have a bunch of pissed off, bitter, aggrieved cheeseheads. A bunch of Packer fans are going to be upset with their panties in the bunch, blaming everyone, pointing fingers, talking about how the referees screwed them, all these type of ridiculous, dumbass conspiracy theories about how Brady gets all the calls and this, that, and the third. If you're a Green Bay Packer fan, you have no one to blame for your loss but yourselves and your team. Matt LaFleur lost his game for you. Aaron Rodgers lost his game for you. Aaron Jones lost his game for you. The inability to capitalize on Tom Brady's mistakes lost his game for you. The inability to score touchdowns in the red zone lost his game for you. Kevin King being victimized the entire game, getting destroyed, being obliterated, getting his lunch money taken in all four quarters of his football game, lost the game for the Green Bay Packers. Mike Pettine with his idiotic, dumbass, Greg Williams-esque play call at the end of the first half, lost this football game for the Green Bay Packers. You have no one to blame but yourselves. You had everything you possibly wanted and could have asked for. You had the NFC Championship game in Green Bay on that frozen tundra. A home NFC Championship game for the first time in Aaron Rodgers' career. He's the league MVP. You're the number one seed going up against a football team. And yes, they won 11 games, but it didn't win their division. They had to play three road games to get back home from the Super Bowl. This was a legacy-defining game and moment for Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers, and they completely shit the bed throughout four quarters of football versus the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, even with Tom Brady in the second half of this game trying really hard to lose the game for the Buccaneers and just give it to the Green Bay Packers. They still couldn't take advantage, and they still lost the football game. Salute to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for the work they put in this season. As first reported right here on the Dion Gordon podcast, I said many weeks ago, all the Buccaneers, in particular Tom Brady, needed was a bye week with some time off. They had a late bye week, week 13, and they have not lost a football game since that bye week. They're 7-0 since that week 13 bye week. And up until today's game, Tom Brady had only thrown one interception through three today. So he's thrown 10 touchdown passes and four picks in this seven-game winning streak for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It is remarkable. It is absolutely incredible. And I really do wish more people would just appreciate what they're seeing and what they're able to witness as sports fans instead of just always hating on shit. Guys like Brady and LeBron and Kobe and Jordan, Tiger when he was in his prime, Roger Federer, Serena Williams, Michael Phelps, for the people who just dominate their sport, who just own their competition time and time again, day in and day out, all day, every day, twice on Sunday. You got to pay homage to people like this. These people perform at a consistently high level and just achieve sustained excellence for a long period of time. It is a joy to watch. And with the three interceptions thrown today, it was a magnificent performance by Tom Brady throughout the totality of the entire season to get Tampa Bay to this point. They won their first playoff game this year for the first time since 2003, winning Super Bowl 37. They've won three road playoff games in a row, something they've never done in franchise history. And they are the first team in NFL history to host the Super Bowl. It is an absolutely incredible achievement. Salute to Bruce Arians and his all-black coaching staff, a majority black coaching staff anyway. Todd Bowles, Byron Leftwich, Larry Foote, Antoine Randall, Todd McNair, and everybody that got down there in Tampa. It's a majority black coaching staff. It's fun to watch. That's always beautiful to see. Bowles and Leftwich should definitely be getting some head coaching looks next season. Great job by everybody down there in Tampa. Moving on to the Super Bowl. Super Bowl 55, February 7, 2020. Raymond James Stadium, Tampa Bay, Florida. Tampa Bay Buccaneers hosting the Super Bowl for the first time ever. I can't say enough about Tom Brady and how awesome he is. I know people get tired of it. I personally don't care. In a world filled with absolute mediocrity and bullshit and low standards and the bar being lowered and lowered on a daily basis, I applaud, acknowledge, and respect and salute people who consistently achieve at a high level, get shit done, win, and just show you the right way to do things. It's an awesome matchup we got for this Super Bowl. I saw a meme earlier that really resonated with me as a wrestling fan. It was a screenshot of The Rock and Hollywood Hulk Hogan from their legendary match at WrestleMania 18 in 2002 at the Sky Dome in Toronto, Canada. And I thought that was a really apt comparison because this is, you know, I thought Tony Romo said something at the end of the game that really made a lot of sense to me, that really stuck out to me. He said, this is pretty much like LeBron playing against Jordan in the NBA Finals, but we never saw that happen. There was no realistic shot of that ever happening. Jordan retired the year before LeBron came into the NBA. So you would never see a LeBron versus Jordan NBA Final, but you will see a Tom Brady versus Patrick Mahomes Super Bowl, and it is similar to what you saw at WrestleMania 18 with the young representative of the current style of wrestling at that time. The Rock at that time was the icon of that era, going up against Hollywood Hulk Hogan. It was the icon of a previous era, but still relevant and still around. And that's pretty much what you got right now with Brady versus Mahomes. You have the guy who's the best quarterback in the NFL right now, the star, the face of the game right now, the guy getting all the commercials. He's the guy the NFL is trying to push as the next face of the league, going up against the old face of the league, the guy who's been the face of the NFL since about 2001, the old icon, the icon of all icons, the GOAT, the greatest quarterback of all time, going up against the best quarterback in the league right now. I can't wait. I'll have predictions, analysis, forecasts, prognostications, whatever you want to call it, about Super Bowl 55 between now and the game February 7th. This is going to be awesome. This is going to be fire. Just like the Deion Gordon podcast, it's awesome, it's fire every episode. You already know how I give it up, just talking that shit every episode, giving you my two cents, my thoughts, and whatever's going on. Appreciate y'all listening, appreciate the support. Picks gonna be rolling, I'm out.